Welcome to the Minion Podcast, a podcast about the Minnesota Twins and Major League Baseball. Today, there's going to be a lot of there's going to be a lot of people on this recording, and the reason for this is because we're doing an AL Central preview. So, everybody that's here already, can you guys introduce yourselves? So people know who you are.
Yeah, this is Max Reaper of Royals Review.
Hey, I'm Jay Markle from Bless You Boys and also Baseball Prospectus.
All right, perfect. And somebody just joined, so say hi. So
hi, this is Chris Davies from Let's Go Tribe.
All right, and we're just waiting on Brett Ballantini from Southside Sox. So Max actually has to be somewhere relatively soon, so
I got about half an hour, so.
All right.
I'm kind of in the same boat here.
Yeah, so I apologize for starting this and not realizing that not everybody was going to be able to do it for the whole time.
It happens.
All right, so I've never actually recorded with this many people, so it might be like I've had audio issues with just one other person, so with three, four other people. I don't know. It might cut out, but we'll just try our best. So we're still waiting on Brett, so let's get started. I wanted to just what are some storylines that we should look for the rest of the division? I've talked extensively with my previous guests on here about Twins storylines, but I really haven't paid much attention to the rest of the division, and I feel like I should be, and I feel like you guys could help me out with this. So let's start with Chris. What do we think? Are there players that we need to watch for that are going to make a big impact? Anything else that is really important?
Well, for Cleveland, it's pretty obvious where the talent comes from. It's Francisco Lindor, Jose Ramirez, and the starting rotation. And outside of that, it's a garbage fire, kind of. If anything is going to come from the rest of the roster, it's going to be a surprise to people in Cleveland as well. I think just about everyone's excited to see Carlos Santana back, but you know, he's getting a little older. It's not entirely clear what he's going to be able to provide in his age 32 season. Probably something less than the 130 WRC plus that he put up in 2016. So, you know, where the offense comes from beyond that is a question. And at Let's Go Tribe, our editor wrote an article a couple weeks back saying that we all need to be cheering for the Twins as well, because the Twins are going to be the ones to push the Indians, it seems like, and I really need the Indians to be pushed.
Sorry. I was actually going to have him on last week, but that never worked out because I wanted to talk to him about that article. Matt Lyons.
Yes. Yeah. It's a great article, and I certainly agree with it because, you know, I'm cheering for the White Sox to sign Machado or something, anything that might get the Indians to have some competition.
Once Brett gets on here, I was going to ask him, how much does he think that if the White Sox get Machado, how much would that improve the White Sox? Because I don't really know if that would get them in a contending position, just the one player, but it would certainly help.
Yeah, looking at the Picota projections, you know, they're at 70 wins, and I think that Machado would probably move them above Kansas City 72 easily, but I don't know if they would even climb up to 500 like the Twins are projected to be.
Yeah. Well, move on to Max. What do you think the Royals storylines are this year?
Well, they've kind of prohibited the word rebuild in camp because they insist it's not a rebuild, but it's pretty clearly still a rebuild in Kansas City. So, you know, they're going to be kind of jockeying with the Tigers, I think, for the seller. But, you know, I don't think you've ever seen a fan base like so optimistic off a 104 loss season as a Royals fan base, because they played much better like in September last year when they really had a young team. So I think kind of that's they want to see that carry over into this year. They want to see what some of the younger guys, Ryan O'Hearn, who is a young slugger at first base, he hit 12 home runs in just 44 games last year. I think they want to see what he can do. I think everyone's excited about Adalberto Mondesi at shortstop, who only played about half a season in the big leagues last year, but he hit 12 home runs and finished eighth in stolen bases. So he's got like that rare power speed combo that I think has people excited that maybe he can be an all-star, maybe even an MVP candidate someday if he can figure out the strike zone a little bit. He strikes quite a bit, strikes out quite a bit, doesn't walk much. So that's going to be his Achilles heel a little bit. They've got a couple of young guys. Brad Keller pitched really well last year as a Rule 5 pick. I think they want to see what Brett Phillips and Jorge Bonifacio can do in the outfield. And so there are some young guys they want to build off of. And they're kind of working towards that day when they can actually compete with the Cleveland Indians and the Minnesota Twins and maybe the Chicago White Sox if they take that leap. So, you know, it's all about the future in Kansas City, but I feel like there's a little light at the end of the tunnel after, you know, a really dismal season last year that Royals fans kind of get excited about some young kids.
The AL Central was awful last year, and I'm really hoping that it gets better this season.
I really don't like seeing the division be the literally a joke for the rest of the league.
I mean, you look at the NL Central last year was probably one of the most hotly contested divisions. Definitely because they had a bunch of teams, three teams contending at the end of the year, and Cleveland had it wrapped up by July.
Well, it's interesting too, because like the division seems like it's there for the taking, and you have a bunch of free agents out there that could really move the needle for some clubs. And, you know, I get that, you know, some of the central teams are maybe a little more financially strapped than the Yankees or the Dodgers, but like, I don't know, it seems like the Twins or the White Sox or even the Indians could, you know, explore that market and maybe try to improve their team. And, you know, maybe they don't feel like they're as good as like the Astros or Red Sox right now, but you never know. I think if I feel like if you're an 85, you know, projected to be 84, 85 win team and you add a piece and you get some breaks, like you can have a pretty good run. And I think the Royals kind of showed that in 2014 and 15 when they weren't like world beaters, but they kind of caught fire and caught lightning in a bottle. And I think, more teams, I think, should really be trying to do that rather than trying to tank to build a super team one day.
I absolutely agree with you. One of our friends over at SB Nation, I think it was John Becker that did it, put together a spreadsheet with a team that was entirely free agents, and they would have been projected to win second in the AL with a pretty decent payroll. So the fact that people aren't taking advantage of this market is it's ridiculous, it's flawed, and they really should be taking advantage of the fact that superstars are available at deals that they may not have ever been before.
Yeah, that's true for everyone in the division. From I know Detroit is probably at the bottom of their rebuild, and Cleveland would be at the opposite end, but both teams could move the needle significantly with one of the top guys out there, and it does seem like the money might be available to make that happen for one of these AL Central clubs and to make it just even a little bit more competitive.
Is everybody still there? Because I think somebody, it just says three people are recording now.
Matt, I'm still here. This is Max.
Chris, still here.
Um, I think Jay is gone unless he's just not. I don't know. But we'll just.
Tiger's budget cuts got even worse.
Yeah. Yeah, but I just. Oh, now he's back. Jay, you there? Somebody just came.
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, this is Brett.
All right. Okay. So, yeah, it's amazing that it's spring training now, and Machado, Harper, Keuchel, all those top free agents have not signed. I don't get why that's still the case.
Yeah, and we're seeing more of the players saying the exact same thing. And I know, you know, Sean Doolittle, Justin Verlander, others have been pretty outspoken. And I think even Adam Wainwright, who seems one of the quieter guys in the league, the other day he said, if this keeps up, there's going to be a strike. And, well, that's really going to suck.
I don't want a lockout, personally.
Yeah, I don't know what can be done at this point, unless Brett knows that Machado's signing is imminent.
Hey, we saw those baseball gloves, right?
Yeah.
The baby shoes with number 7.
Was that a Yonder Alonso reference, though?
That were actually for Yonder Alonso.
Yeah.
And like Bryce Harper with the Phillies or whatever, like I think his announcement is going to come when the MLB The Show cover comes out.
That'd be great personal branding.
Well, I was joking to some friends that the cover of MLB The Show is just going to be Bryce Harper like shopping at the mall or something like that, because he's not going to have a team or be playing baseball. So I don't know like what's driving that, like what's if he feels like he needs to get in before that comes out.
Yeah. It would just be very, very weird to have like this huge announcement come from a video game or whatever. That would be just really funny, I think.
Yeah. The way this season and last season's off, you know, the free agent markets have gone, though, nothing would really surprise me.
Yeah. And I really don't think we can make any predictions until, like, informed predictions until those two and all the others sign, because someone who just joined our staff is actually going to write about why the Twins should sign Keuchel. And I think that would really help the pitching staff for the Twins.
It certainly couldn't hurt.
Yeah, when you get a Cy Young Award winner. Dallas Keuchel did win the Cy Young, correct?
I believe that was 16?
Okay. When you get a former Cy Young Award winner, it's... I mean, the Twins got Bartolo Colon. He's a former Cy Young Award winner, and that didn't... Well, he did throw a complete game two-hitter or whatever it was. That was pretty cool.
I do think that all baseball fans should be outraged that nobody has signed Big Sexy so far.
Nobody has signed Bartolo. That is a travesty.
Well, that's kind of like the underrated aspect of the slow off season. I mean, like all the attention's to Harper and Machado, but there's like over 100, you know, guys that are still unsigned. And like, granted, a lot of them aren't like very good players or players that maybe are going to wash out or retire. But, you know, in the past, you've seen a lot of these guys get minor league deals. And like the Royals should be signing like every single minor league, you know, every single player they can get on a minor league deal just to bring guys into camp. And they've only signed like three guys. They brought in Drew Storen this week. But it seems like the minor league free agent market is also down, which is kind of weird to me. I don't know if that's just part of like teams are relying on youth more and they feel like, you know, the 33-year-old journeyman isn't really going to help them, or if those guys are asking for major league deals and they're not really worth it or what. But I feel like that's been underreported a little bit, like how that market has kind of fallen through as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. The Indians are certainly seeming to take that path where anybody over 29 is off limits. But there's a guy out there that a lot of people in that are fans of Cleveland enjoy or would like to see them sign, Derek Dietrich. He's 29. He would offer, you know, utility spot basically, and he's still available. He'd surely be a minor league contract kind of guy at this point, after being DFA'd by the Marlins, and even he can't seem to get work unless his ask is too high. But it's very confusing.
Well, beyond free agency, it's transactions in general. I mean, I know Seattle's gone crazy the offseason, but we're not even seeing a lot of trade activity, and I'm not sure what that's connected to, if the increased social media scrutiny or fantasy interest or analytical bent of the game. But it seems to me like even the, you know, aside from maybe one or two teams, the trade market is sort of flat as well. It would be one thing if guys are still waiting to get signed, but there's still an active trade market and you felt like your teams were actively trying to help themselves. But I'm not sure I see many teams even pursuing that. A lot of threats. I know Rick Hahn has said we got four or five deals in the works, but those deals never pan out.
I think a lot of that's probably a byproduct of how many teams are tanking or rebuilding, however you want to call it. And then teams are just like hoarding prospects now. Like you don't see teams wanting to give up prospects because they're perceived to be so valuable because you get so many controllable years. And so, you know, if you have, you know, too many sellers and not enough buyers, I think that's going to lead to inactivity. And God bless Jerry DePoto, because if it weren't for him, like, I don't think we'd see any activity this offseason, maybe, you know, a couple trades with the Reds. But yeah, you're right. You know, the big thing is, I don't know exactly what's causing it, whether it's collusive activity between owners or if it's just analytics, but this is really bad for baseball. Like, I don't know if you guys are NBA fans. I kind of casually follow the sport, but they're, you know, NBA Twitter is just awesome. Like, there's so many great stories and narratives and drama and trades.
NBA Twitter.
Yeah, it's the best. It's so great. And then you look at baseball and you're like, oh, there's nothing. So it's so depressing right now. Just because you can't even get excited. Like, even for Royals fans, like, you can't get excited about trades or, you know, all we have is like Billy Hamilton to get excited about as far as like transactions. And yeah, you just don't see those kind of moves anymore.
There's really no equivalent to Adrian Wojnarowski's influence on NBA Twitter for MLB Twitter.
Yeah, he has a monopoly on it now. I guess we have Ken Rosenthal, but it seems like he's getting scooped a little bit more by other guys now.
Bob Nightingale.
Bob being Bob.
Yeah, Rob Nyer and Bob Nightingale aspire to that, I think, and are constantly a step behind or a step off base.
It's just like whenever there's a big trade, Woj is always the one guy to break it for basketball, and then like 10 people in baseball when there's a signing are like all at once, and then Bob Nightingale's like an hour behind or whatever.
I know.
Yeah, I feel like.
Oh, go ahead.
I feel like teams have to be seeing this at ticket sales, right? Because I think I saw the Phillies were like, "Yeah, our ticket sales have been okay," but and then people are like, "You know what would really boost ticket sales? You know, signing Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, or at least you know some of these players." Like, you know, I have to think a lot of fan bases are kind of, you know, not that enthusiastic about the upcoming season, even if they have pretty good teams. It's just because like if you're a Dodgers fan, are you really excited about AJ Pollock? Like, they could have signed Harper or Machado, it seemed like. And gosh, the Dodgers are still a really good team. But and I'm sure fans will turn out, you know, this year anyway, but I don't know. It just seems like the excitement level is lower than I've seen in baseball in a long time.
That's a really good point. It's something that I think just about everyone at Let's Go Tribe has discussed at some point, because after the 2016 season, obviously Cleveland got a lot of season ticket holders because of the World Series run, but their single biggest day was after they signed Edwin Encarnacion. And they sold a few hundred that day, and it was a big boost. And then they did nothing last offseason, and they lost people coming through the gates. And it seems like a very clear cause and effect. I mean, there's always more to whatever situation, but they signed a big name for the first time in a long time. That was one of the biggest contracts the team's ever given out. And it got people to come to the park. Whatever the holdup is this offseason, it really boggles the mind a little bit.
Well, I have to imagine, too, that a winter full of "we might trade our best pitcher away" probably doesn't help in Cleveland as well.
Yeah, that just made us all try to rationalize everything.
I was going to ask, because few weeks ago I had a fellow Twinkie Town staff member on, Brandon Brooks, and we talked about the Twins' expectations in the AL Central. Something that Brandon said was pretty smart, I think. It's not what do the Twins have to do to win the division, it's what does Cleveland have to do to lose it.
Yeah, that does seem like the reality at this point. And again, why gotta cheer for Minnesota to make that signing, to get Keuchel or someone that's gonna, you know, force a chess move from Cleveland too.
I mean, they already got Nelson Cruz, that helped.
For a guy who's in the twilight of his career, I do think that he still has some pop available that will benefit Minnesota's lineup for sure.
I don't know if you guys read it, but after the Twins signed Nelson Cruz, I actually wrote a piece where it was like rounding up a bunch of responses from people who were from media and just a bunch of random folks. And there was some like it was pretty decent, most of it. And then some people were like, well, he's almost like 40 and nothing, and nobody can do anything when they're 40. Just that's
they did watch Bartolo Colon last season, right?
Is Bartolo gonna retire anytime soon?
Not by choice.
I hope not. How old is he at this point? 45?
Yeah.
It's just I don't want him to ever retire. I just want him to keep pitching because he's great.
I wish we didn't know his age so he could be like Satchel Paige for baseball fans now. Just an ageless wonder.
So the Twins had Bartolo Colon. Now they have Williams Astudillo. So they've cornered the market on the super fun players that everybody loves.
Did his visa issue get settled? I know he was detained from getting to spring training.
I did not hear about that. I know he got there.
Okay, well, that's good. That's all that really matters.
He got a haircut. I saw that. Somebody Somebody just dropped off again. Oh boy. Yeah, I did not hear that he got detained. It's just there was a whole episode, couple episodes ago where we started out the site manager. Well, he's now the site manager. He wasn't at the time of recording it. TJ Gorsigner, we just started talking about how Nelson Cruz is going to help the Twins, and then spent like the entire rest of the episode talking about how that one home run that Williams Astudillo hit in the Winter League, where he just was like celebrating all the way around the bases, and how people didn't like that because they hate fun.
I don't know how anyone could not like Williams. I just pulled up his projections, and he's projected to strike out 13 times. That's just insane. You got to cheer for a guy that does stuff like that.
He's got like two true outcomes. He doesn't have the strikeout.
He doesn't walk. Probably. Either.
So all he does is put the ball in play.
Baseball could use more of that.
That's another thing that people think baseball is boring because there's a lot of there's a lot of time when play isn't going on, and I think Williams Estudio was like single-handedly speeding up the pace of play or something like that, just because he puts the ball in play all the time.
Yeah, I don't think they have pace stats for. Well, they do. He was at, his pace was actually rather slow, 25 seconds. But just putting the ball in play is enough to make him fun to watch.
He did hit that walk-off home run. I had at that point kind of stopped. That was when the Twins kind of fall out of the race. I sort of switch into football mode in October and late September, but Williams Astudillo hit a walk-off home run, and everybody was talking about that. So, but that was really late in the season, so I wasn't watching it, and I felt really disappointed. He also pitched, and I missed that too. Yeah, so who's still here? Like, I know there are two other people here, but somebody left.
Chris.
The White Sox are represented here with Brett.
Oh, Brett, you're finally here. All right. So we just kind of have been talking about well, we were talking about Williams Estudio, but we were talking about what do we expect from like the teams in the Central, and we've talked about the White Sox and the Royals. Not the White Sox, the Royals and the Indians, and a little bit about the Tigers. But I wanted to ask, what are your expectations for the White Sox? I know it's not going to be a great season, most likely.
Yeah, when we get together with these division talks, shouldn't we just, I mean, no offense to the Indians, shouldn't we just award the division title to like the third wild card finisher in some other division? Because it seems like this is going to be a extremely painful division to watch. I sort of hope the Twins have a little kick in them with some of the acquisitions they've actually made. And of course, Cleveland will be pretty good, but going to be ugly again for the White Sox. I mean, I know everybody was talking about the dead free agent market, and you know, the White Sox only hope to really push, you know, make any sort of run toward 80 wins, maybe even 75 wins would be to pick up a Machado, but not just that, probably add another couple guys via trade or free agency. I think they're projected at about 72 wins, which actually seems perhaps a little generous. Maybe that's a product of how bad the rest of the division is going to be again. But, you know, they haven't done anything. They've stood still, you know, they're in a holding pattern with the rebuild, which is frustrating for fans. I know there's so much preaching of patience, but, you know, some of the things that have happened with the White Sox, like Michael Kopech blowing out his getting the Tommy John surgery, and Eloy Jimenez being kept down to purportedly continue to work on his defense. Those things certainly haven't helped move the window forward. So, this was a real ray of hope this offseason that the White Sox were not just at the table talking Machado and Harper, but actually seemed to be, through whatever strange circumstances, including, you know, all the tanking going on and maybe a couple teams being a little constricted with their budgets, that they actually were maybe seated at the head of the table. And the fact that we've gone from that excitement and that buzz to now just sitting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting is and it really takes a lot of air out of things. I mean, even with Machado, the team's still going to, you know, it's still at least a good year, if not a couple, 3 years away. But geez, you just sort of want somebody in the clubhouse who you think is going to be around a few years from now. And there's just not that many guys, you know, still, you know, it's definitely less than half the team. It's hard to really get on board and get excited about 2019 when, you know, it's just another transition season.
Is the Sox front office already talking about service time for Eloy and holding him back again?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a given that I'm not sure what date is circled on the calendar. I believe it's somewhere mid-April. It's pretty early. I think it's a very similar situation to Guerrero, mm-hmm. where it's going to be a real token, I mean, real obvious, just really gross service time manipulation. And, you know, what Rick Hahn had said is – he needs to work on his defense, which, you know, you get a guy like that, he can play barehanded, he can play naked, and he's going to be able to contribute to the team. So, you know, it's so bald-faced. That's frustrating too. I mean, I think what's even frustrating for me as a fan who doesn't just buy into this rebuild nonsense automatically and just nod along is how many fans now almost fight for the right. I mean, there so many people last year were saying, well, this is, it's a wasted season. Why would you bring these guys up? You know, even when Kopech came up in July, why would you bring them up? This is a lost season. People seem to now be forgetting that, you know, there's a purpose to having these guys in the major leagues. The purpose of playing baseball is to win games. And though I can see this strange, you know, spreadsheet type of strategy, you know, when you've got fans actually cheering for the tank and cheering for certain and evaluating the service time manipulation, and that's depressing stuff, man.
Like we were talking about the NBA a little bit. The Knicks are tanking. They just lost 17 games in a row. And that's got to be painful to watch, but I think people are also kind of, when teams are tanking, no matter what the sport, they're like, okay, just go ahead.
I think one of the worst things about professional sports fandom is that fans put themselves in the shoes of the owner as if that were ever realistic. They think about the payroll. They think about, you know, would this guy be good for the team? Could we afford him long-term? Blah, blah, blah. They don't just think about, hey, what's going to help this team win, you know, mm-hmm. and that's where like college sports, I think, kind of wins out, because there's no payrolls. That's not ethical in my opinion, but fans, right. It's a little bit more pure because they just want to see a win and they don't care who it is. And, you know, once you get to this part of the college basketball season, for instance, people are just cheering for spoilers, you know, like the Big Ten, you don't care if Penn State beats Michigan like they did last week. But if they do, you're like, oh, hey, that that might knock Michigan off the number one line into a number two or something like that. And so you cheer for Penn State, and Penn State fans are still engaged. And now we're talking about, like, what does Bryce Harper mean to the bottom line of the White Sox, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Bottom line is the White Sox would win a few more games if they had Bryce Harper. Why shouldn't fans want them to sign him?
I was talking to Ben Kuchnerkiewicz, or I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I think that's how you pronounce it, from Purple Row. And he sent me a message the other day, like, I think if the Twins sign Bryce Harper, they're going to win the division. And I responded back, but are the Twins going to actually sign Bryce Harper? Probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd understand that angle from fans if there was maybe a hard salary cap, because then that's a whole nother dynamic of strategy, and it's sort of a gross and stupid one. I don't really care that much about it, but at least you could understand it better because you know you have limited money available. What's the smartest way to use it? But that isn't the case here, like it is even in other sports. So you're right to for fans to put themselves in the owner's box like that when any of these guys could spend as much as they want. Let's face it, the Marlins could, and they have, you know, for stretches gone crazy with spending. I mean, there's no limitations. The luxury tax isn't terribly prohibitive. So that's sort of an angle I might understand if that was present in baseball, but it's not. And, you know, the idea that polls are being run saying, hey, are you behind this rebound? Are you behind the tanking? You service time and a substantial number. I might even think a plurality of fans are behind the idea of the service time manipulation because it's like smart or something. To me, the smartest thing is just to win some games, look like you're trying to engage the fans, but I think we're not in that era right now.
I've never really understood fully the concept of tanking. I mean, I guess it works because there have been some teams that have been really bad and then all of a sudden they just win a bunch of games and get into the playoffs and do damage. But it just doesn't seem fun to just watch your team lose over and over and over again.
No, and even as an Indians fan, I'm looking at the NL East and NL Central with, you know, jealousy, because they're going to have the NL East will have four teams competing down to the last weekend, hopefully. And the NL Central is just so tightly bunched at the top. And you even have Cincinnati that's made moves and Pittsburgh that should be improved after making trades like for Chris Archer last year. And then the AL Central it's a race to the bottom. And so, I don't understand the tanking, except to try to be the next Astros or Cubs. And I don't see many teams having the same good fortune and knowledge to do so.
I mean, look at the Cubs. They're being projected. I mean, everybody, Cubs fans here are calling it a tie or fifth place, but I'd like to point out to them that's last place. Now they're being projected for last place in a very tight division. Of course, they won the World Series, and that's, you know, as you would very well know, a huge, huge thing for them. Astros won a World Series, but this tanking is not a guarantee for a dynasty. I mean, I might be willing to buy in if you knew you had 3-4 World Series titles ahead of you. I mean, but that's not the case. You know, Astros do sort, and you know, everybody acknowledges them as being the premier organization in baseball, but truth is they still have just one. Looks like they can be there competing and close for maybe the next 10, but we don't know that they will. The Cubs, you know, there's already talk now, you know, is their window closed? And granted, they won the one, and that's super huge, and we all want to win a World Series, but you know, if this tanking guaranteed you something even more than that, it might even be to buy into. But the truth is, these windows can close really quickly. Bad fortune.
That just reminded me of that ESPN thing where they said, like, Chicago sports championships, and they had the Cubs in 2016 and all the Blackhawks and the Bulls, and then they didn't show the White Sox in 2005.
Yeah, we're used to it. It's happened more than once. But 2005 did happen.
I actually watched a YouTube video about like the Forgotten World Series or something like that, and it was the 2005 World Series. And I guess it's just because, like, once you end a streak, like the 108 years that the Cubs went without, as I understand it, the White Sox also had a pretty long drought.
Yeah, it's nothing to be proud of. 88 years is still pretty significant, though. So, I mean, they went right after the, I mean, that was the next year after the curse got broken by the Red Sox. So that was a back-to-back.
Yeah, and the Twins have not, they haven't won a World Series in my lifetime, and they've gotten, closest they've gotten was the ALCS, which they lost, of course.
Hayden, and this is Chris. I gotta jump off here. Thanks for having me, though.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Good luck this season.
Yeah, this was fun. I appreciate that you were able to come on. All right, so there's... Yeah, and it's just kind of... Like, it's been 28 years since the Twins have won one. That's actually not very long.
No.
But it seems... Like, I'm really young, so it seems like forever, but it's... When you look at 108 years or 88 years or... However long the Red Sox went without one, that's, I think it was 92 years. It pales in comparison.
I was 36 when the White Sox won, so you still have quite a bit of time before you're passing me in terms of waiting your entire life for a title. And I consider myself lucky, and I knew then it may never happen again. I'm not counting on it, so happy I had the one. I hope you get one.
My dad, I'm actually a Packers fan because my dad's from Milwaukee, and he went until he was 25 until they won a Super Bowl, and he grew up a Brewers fan, but he's now a Twins fan. But we were cheering for the Brewers in the NLCS. That, of course, never came to fruition.
Well, it's easy to root against the Cubs, so there are a lot of people rooting for the Brewers.
Especially for you. You have some... I was rooting for the Cubs in 2016 just because I wanted to see them finally get one.
Yeah, I mean, it was a likable enough team. You know, there's definitely some, you know, young stars, and somebody was going to break a streak with Cleveland on the other side. So, you know, you knew something was going to happen for one of the fan bases. And I don't think I was quite rooting for them, but sort of like a no win, no lose situation for me. So it was a good series, at least.
Yeah, and Cleveland, after erasing a 3-1 deficit in the NBA Finals, blew their own 3-1 lead. So that was kind of funny. Well, I did say this was going to be about 45 minutes. We are approaching that mark. So unless there's anything else pressing that you want to bring up, I was going to end it here. I think we covered quite a bit.
We can all get together and do our special update when maybe one, if not maybe two players sign. Perhaps then that would be worthy of the whole dynamic of the division changing if some team in the division acquires one, but who knows?
episode 29 update. Finally, they signed. It's May.
Hey, it's still free. Don't have to pay extra. Still free.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining me.
Sure. Thanks.
I understand you came on a little late, but thanks for stopping by anyway.
Absolutely. Anytime.
And as I understand it, you're starting up your own podcast.
Yeah, we had a couple few episodes last year, start of the year, and then the guy who was running it sort of, I guess, dropped out. So, yeah, we want to get something running and going again, and yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, so if you ever needed someone to talk about the Twins on your show, I'd volunteer.
Absolutely.
I don't know how great of analysis I'd be able to provide, but
as long as you're not too mean to the White Sox, I think you're welcome.
Absolutely not. I don't like the White Sox just because, like, when I was growing up, the Twins and White Sox had a huge rivalry, like in the early 2000s. Sorry for making you feel old.
Well, you got the best of that end pretty much every time out. So, you know, I'll accept your apology anytime.
Yeah. So that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening and see you next time.